Thank you. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Previous couple of Anucheds, it was discussed how the devotees of the Lord would generally live in the Lord's personal abode, are also on the spiritual platform, and they are to be considered non-different from the Supreme Lord Himself. Because they have transcendental bodies, and those bodies are manifesting the potencies of the Supreme Lord that he shares with his devotees. Okay, now we're at the beginning of 77. Tata cha padmo tara kande. Similarly, in the Uttara Kanda of the Padma Purana, is the passage beginning. We have several verses here, but that's only, even that much is just the beginning of this section, which says, Tripadibhutir lokastu asamkhya parikirtita shuddha sattvamayak sarve brahmanda sukha Brahmananda Sukhavaya. The worlds of the three-quarters expansion are declared to be countless. The substance of all of them is pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva. And they are identified with the happiness of Brahma. Brahmananda Sukha. Akwaya, their name is happiness of Brahman. These worlds in the three quarter part of the of all existence, which is the spiritual world. Sarve, so the worlds we're talking about. Sarve nitya nirvikara hiya raga vivarjita. Sarve hiranmaya shuddha koti surya sama prabha. They, these worlds, are eternal, changeless, and devoid of inferior affections. They are all effulgent like gold, perfectly pure, and as brilliantly glowing as millions of suns. Sarve vedamaya divya kama prodati vargita narayana parapoja bhaktika rasa sevinaha. They are composed, all of them, of the Vedic sound and are transcendentally brilliant. Without any tinge of lust, anger, and other undesirable emotions. They partake of the exclusive, pleasurable taste of devotion for the lotus feet of Narayan. And Nirantaram Samakana Paripurna Sukham Shrita Sarve Pancho Panashat Swarupa Veda Varchasaha. They are all perpetually filled with the overflowing joy of the songs of the Samaveda, and they are one with the five great Upanishads, and they shine with the light of the Vedas. Well, okay, these are describing the worlds again. I guess we're not done with the worlds. Okay.
Let's read a short commentary on this. The universe we material conditioned souls live in is a vast expanse containing many planets with various forms of life. And the spiritual universe, Vaikuntha, is similar. Its vastness, however, is infinite. And the worlds that fill it, Vaikuntha, are transcendental, incorruptible, self-effulgent realms ruled by the countless self-same expansions of Lord Narayan. Inconceivably, to our limited minds, the light of that spiritual sky and the sound of the Vedas are identical. Usually, material realm, the different objects of sense perception are distinct. Sound and light are not the same thing. But there is an identity between the light of the spiritual sky and the sound of the Vedas. Mentioned here is of the five Upanishads, five principal Upanishads. Upanishads are all transcendental, so they're all Shruti, so they all have absolute authority. But not all Upanishads are the same. Some of them are more important. More important philosophically. The philosophy of Vedanta is found in the major Upanishads. And other Upanishads speak about more specific topics, about the practice of yoga, about the worship of particular deities, or particular methods of sadhana, particular kinds of meditation or other sadhanas. So, but there's 11, here's five of the most important, but there are 11 or sometimes 14 Vedantic Upanishads, where the significant presentation of the philosophy of the Absolute Truth is presented. Okay, any questions on this section? Yes. No, I think we should understand that it's full of happiness because there are living entities there who are happy. It's not just the world, you know, it's a big smiley face, you know, but the world is populated by living beings who are happy, therefore the world is happy. It's metaphorical, you know, and the world itself may also be a person, may be happy, but there are many happy persons in that world. It's full of happiness because it's full of living entities who are happy.
Can it be also because the Supreme Lord of Lord Parana is also manifestation of Lord Parana, who is the Buddha Parana?
Well, it's his energy. So it's him, but it's not really identical with him. It's his creation. But you can say, you can argue the world Vaikuntha itself is happy, is a person and is happy, that's okay. Yes?
Can we say that by implication, Goloka Vrindavan is unlimited also? Goloka Mathura, Goloka Vrindavan?
Of course. We understand from Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary on Brahma Samhita that actually Goloka occupies much more, you know, the vast majority of the space in the spiritual realm. And that the rest of the spiritual world, all the rest of the Vaikuntha planets, are just, the Goloka is described like a lotus flower with thousands of petals. And the small space in between the petals is the rest of Vaikuntha. So it's more infinite than the rest of Vaikuntha. It's the majority of it. Goloka. Okay. Yes.
Here it is mentioned that the sound of the Vedas are the effulgent, and also we hear in Vaikuntha that they chant the Samaveda, like Vedic mantras. So I just want to know that is it the language of Vaikuntha is like in Sanskrit, and also what
that would be not only Sanskrit, but Vedic Sanskrit. That is, it is. Sanskrit is definitely, you know, the main language in Vaikuntha. Yes.
And what would be in Golokuta?
No, the Brahmins speak Sanskrit. The women generally don't. They speak Prakrit. According to the way it's recorded in the poetry and the dramas by the Vaishnavacharyas, but though that, especially the drama, follows stereotype patterns of poetic composition that are prescribed in the textbooks. The women are supposed to speak Prakrit. That may just be a dramatic, you know, standard. Maybe it doesn't reflect. Maybe it doesn't exactly reflect the language, speech patterns in Vaikuntha. I don't know.
What mean the Goloka?
Oh, Goloka. Well, okay, but Goloka, we have the descriptions of, well, really descriptions of Gokula. Goloka manifested on the earth in the poetry, the dramas of Rupa Goswami and so on. There, the ladies are speaking Prakrit. Okay? That's Goloka as reflected on the earth. We don't have, you know, similar records of, you know, transcription of speech patterns in the Goloka, you know, above Vaikuntha. We don't have that record. We don't have that information. But we can infer from the way Rupa Goswami describes Krishna's earthly pastimes that not everybody's speaking Sanskrit. The women and low-class people speak Prakrit. In the dramas, I'm just wondering whether the dramas necessarily are accurately reflecting or trying to accurately reflect how they actually spoke, or especially how they speak in Goloka. So we have to end up saying we don't know for sure.
What is Prakrit? What is the language where it born of? What is the language
Prakrit
actually mean?
What is Prakrit?
Yeah, what did it say?
Oh.
Is it like Vrijbhasha, something different? Or like?
Yeah. When Sanskrit becomes corrupt in the, you know, in the hands, in the mouths of less educated people, it becomes Prakrit. When Prakrit further degrades, it becomes what is called apabhramsha. That's like second degree, you know, corruption. And when apabhramsha degrades even more, you have the modern North Indian languages. Third degree of corruption. Apabhramsha, you can see records of it, you know, 12th, 13th century AD, you can see books written in apabhramsha. And from apabhramsha come the modern Indian, North Indian languages. Okay, and then Prakrit. There are books that were written in Prakrit 1500 years ago and so on. And Prakrit, a sort of artificial poetic version of Prakrit, is used in dramas, you know, even still is being used.
Yes. Bengali would
find this correctly. Bengali is a derivative originally from Magadhi Prakrit. Magadhi Prakrit, and then several apabhramshas. You know, there are five or six different dialects, Anga, Wanga, Sukhma, different regions of Bengal. They all had their different dialects. And only in the last 600 or 700 years have they started merging into one language. Yes.
Continuing the same question of Nitya Guru, like, so what happens to those who doesn't know the Prakrit or Sanskrit, like in southern part of India,
yes,
Telugu, Marathi and all those people. So what happens, like, how they can reciprocate this, like, after going to Guru?
No, when you take birth in the spiritual world, you're born with knowledge of the language. You don't have to go to school or learn from your parents. Maybe they have a passion for learning from their parents, but they don't have to go to school to learn how to read and write in Vaikuntha. See, this is why you should want to go for the spiritual world. You don't have to go to school again and take tests. You're born with knowledge, or parents tell you everything you need to know. Yes?
Yeah. Then this knowledge, it's automatically we get there.
Yeah, you get all knowledge. When you're spiritual, when you're liberated, all knowledge comes automatically. There's no obstacles. There's no ignorance covering you. You have to go to school because you're born ignorant. But nobody's born ignorant in Vaikuntha. They know everything already.
Yeah.
Whatever they need to know is revealed to them. They can go to the nearest desire tree and, pick all the knowledge they want.
Okay. One devotee also, I heard speaking in that, if you want to go to Goloka, you should know how to milk the cow.
You should know how to milk the cow?
Yeah, so
that's folklore. When you get to Goloka, it'll be built into your genes. You'll know how to milk a cow. It's not bad practice. And that's what they're telling you. Why don't you get into the mood and milk a cow? But it's not that, you're not going to be allowed to go local because you don't know how to milk a cow. They'll tell you how. Yes, Rev.
I'm sorry for returning from the milking cows in the
yes,
something. Previous hierarchy. But in Sanskrit, Aparamsa has a third degree.
That's the second degree.
No, then you have the third
modern
degree.
Modern language, yeah.
So where do Rajabhasha and Pali enter?
Pali is just a variety of Magadhi Prakrit, and it was spoken over 2,000 years ago. Brajbhasha, you mean what they speak here now? Is really, as far as I know, it's just a dialect of Hindi. It has a literary tradition going back 500 or 600 years. It's been used, Brajbhasha has been used by poets. And so, it's developed because it became a literary language, a very prominent literary language. And writers, poets from all over North India were writing in Brajbhasha. So it became a prominent language, it developed, but it's really just another Hindi, variety of Hindi. The original Brajbhasha, spoken by the Brajbhasis eternally, that is a kind of Prakrit. Probably what you call Shuddha Sengi Prakrit. Shuddhas, there are two major Prakrits, although there are 15 altogether, but two major ones. Magadhi, which Magadha is Bihar and Bengal. And Shuddha Sengi is everything from here to Dwarka in Shurasane. So what they spoke in Mathura, the Prakrit that's spoken in Mathura is Shaurasane Prakrit. And I think that's the original Brajbhasha. Nobody speaks it anymore. You can see it in the dramas, but it's not a living language. Okay, yeah.
Two questions. First one is about Mrichkas. So Mrichkas are called those who cannot speak properly. So does it mean that Mrichkas are those who cannot speak only Sanskrit or Sanskrit as well?
By definition, a Mrichka is someone who doesn't know Sanskrit. So, yeah.
So does it mean that the women in the spiritual world, they also know Mrichkas?
I don't know. Same. It's not that they don't know Sanskrit, they just don't use it. You see in the dramas, sometimes same women who've been speaking to Prakrit all along. First of all, the men are talking to them in Sanskrit and they're answering them in Prakrit. So they understand the Sanskrit. But it's just, they have their own language. Okay, it's not that they're ignorant of Sanskrit, but they just don't use it. Okay. I think we're getting away from the topic. We're going to be, we have to get back to the discussion.
One small question about or not it to come. The what is the language of Bodhi? Is it Bengali or Sanskrit?
I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says something about Bengali being spoken in Navadvipa in the spiritual world, yes. And Prabhupada has confirmed that, yes. Okay, one last question, then we move on. Yeah.
It mentioned here that five major Upanishads, which are they?
I don't know which five. I know 11, so I don't know which one of the five, which one of the five is most important. Somewhere else, somebody can tell you that, but I don't know. Okay.
Can I ask one?
Yeah.
With this language, what about this Spanish, French, Italian, the foreign languages, what about that? How they appear?
Yeah. By further corruption, see the Sanskrit, languages that are related to Sanskrit were spoken through a large part of Europe and Asia, the Indo-European languages, not only in India. The barbarians who lived in Europe, many of them, not all of them, were speaking languages that are connected with Sanskrit. And you have different groups of those languages. The Greek language became very prominent. Greek is definitely connected with Sanskrit. It's very similar. And then connected with Greek is the Latin language. And the Romance languages like French, Italian, Spanish are derived, their corrupted forms of Latin. So your Spanish is a corrupted form of Latin, which is sort of related to Greek, which is a very corrupted sister language of Sanskrit. And you can see, the linguists can trace the similarities in the languages. Words that are shared, grammatical forms that are shared, or similar. Okay, now, 77.2, back to Vaikuntha. Okay. So we're discussing what the, who is this, what are we quoting here? The Uttarakhanda of the Pampa Purana. It's talking about Tripad Vibhuti. So what is that Tripad Vibhuti? Now, Atra Tripad Vibhuti Shabdena Prapanchatita Loko Abhidiyate. Pada Vibhuti Shabdena Tu Prapancha Iti. Well, here, to clarify it, here the term three-quarters expansion indicates the world beyond matter, while one-quarter expansion means the material world. This is stated in the same section of the Pampa Purana. So a few more verses in clarifying what Tripad Vibhuti is. Yatoktam tatraiva Tripad Vyapti Param Damni Pados yeha bhavat punaha tripad vibhutir nityam sya anityam padam aishwaram. The expanse of three quarters is in the supreme abode, while the single quarter is found here. The wonders of the three quarters are eternal, but the opulence of the one quarter is temporary. Nityam tad rupam ishasya param tamnistitam shubham achyutam shashvatam divyam sadayavanam ashritam nityam sambhogyam ishvarya shriya bhumya chasamritam. Okay, this is sort of answering what Sarvagya was asking about who's happy here. The personal form of the Supreme Lord, situated in his supreme abode, is eternal and all auspicious. It is infallible, always the same, divinely effulgent, and always youthful. The objects of the Lord's enjoyment are also eternal, and they are maintained by his potencies Ishwari, Shri, and Bhumi. Okay, so that's who's happy in the spiritual world. The Supreme Lord and his Shaktis, they're the prime enjoyers. Short commentary,
the Supreme Lord, in his various forms, occasionally descends to the material world, but he is always present in all his forms in the tree Pad Vibhuti. There he is also accompanied always by his consort pleasure potencies. As he is one, his supreme potency is also one. And as he expands without limit, so she does also. So we have a list here of three consorts, but actually he has one. These other ones are her expansions. Just like all the gopis are expansions of Srimati Radharani. Okay, any questions on that? Let's try to stay focused on what Jiva Goswami is discussing though. Yes?
Usually when we speak about potency, we mention Shri, Hu, and Jiva, to get potency, but here we have Ishwari, Shri, Hu, and Jiva. So what is the difference?
I'm not sure. And which one is the major Lakshmi? Is it Shri or is it Ishwari? I guess it's Shri, Ishwari, I guess corresponds to Nila, but I'm not sure. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Ata eva tadanusarena tritiya skandopi evam yojaniya. Okay, therefore, and so, the statements of the second canto should also be interpreted in line with this presentation. Well, okay, what statements of the second canto? These, tatra. So vitasya bhayasyesho martyam annam yadat yagat mahimaisha tato brahman purushasya duratyayaha. Now that's actually a paraphrase. Right, almost, you know, part of its direct quote of the words of the Purusha Sukta. This is the second canto of the sixth chapter, Purusha Sukta confirmed. It's Purusha Sukta commentated on by the Bhagavatam. So this verse, Somitasya Vyashyesho, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of immortality, Abhaya. I'm sorry, Amrita. And fearlessness, abhaya, and he is transcendental to death. Marjam anam yad adyagat. Well, what is anam? He's transcendental to death and to the fruitive actions of the material world. Anam means what? Food, but that's symbolic for fruitive actions in the material world. O Narada, O Brahman. It is therefore difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. This is Brahma explaining the Purusha Sukta to Narada in this chapter. Okay, now Jiva Goswami looks at this verse and he makes a comment. Amritadi dvayam tat tritiyatvena vakshamanasya kshemasya pibalakshanam. Okay. The Purusha Sukta mentions three things, Amrita, Abhaya, and Kshema. The Kshema is not mentioned here, but Jiva Goswami says, Kshema is security, or well-being. The pair of words beginning with immortality, that's immortality and fearlessness, also implies the third of their group, well-being, Kshema, which will be mentioned later. In other words, Brahma will use the word Kshema and in a verse after this. Shrutaucha, and the Shruti moreover says, and that's the actual Purusha Sukta, Utamritas yasyesha na, it atra amitatvam tadyugalo upalakshanam. In the Shruti moreover, immortality implies the other two in the words, he is indeed the Lord of immortality. The Shruti just says immortality, but elsewhere it says Abhaya and Kshema. So when it says immortality, it implies he's the Lord also of the other two, of fearlessness and of well-being. So Brahma can imply well-being by saying Amrita and Abhaya, since the Purusha Sutra itself says all three by implication, just using the one word, Amrita. Atra dharmi pradana nirdeshaha shrutau tu tatra dharma matra nirdeshasyapya api tatraiva tatparya. In this verse of the second canto, reference is being made primarily to the entity who possesses the qualities. And in the Shruti, the reference is to only the qualities. To only the qualities also means to encompass the whole entity. Well, what is that? It's because it says, what is it? In this first and second canto, it says he's the Lord of immortality. So it's talking about him, the Lord. But it's the Lord in connection with his qualities, Amrita and Abhaya. Whereas in the Shruti, okay, I think the commentary will explain this better. What's the difference? In this verse, second canto verse, the reference being made primarily to the entity who happens to have the qualities. But in the Shruti, the reference is to the qualities, and it implies the person who has the qualities. Okay, but I don't see how it's different. Both of them say Amritasyesha. But let's see. Here's the commentary. Maybe it explains. According to Lord Brahma, instructing his son, Narada, here in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Sri Vishnu, the Lord of creation, presides over immortality and fearlessness. And in the following verse, cited in 77.6. Okay. In the following verse. Okay, that's confusing because the following verse could mean the verse that we're going to quote two lines below. That's not what I mean. In the verse that follows the one that's quoted here and will be quoted later on in the Anuchet, let me read you the verse. Padeshu sarva bhutani pumsat stitipado viduhu amritam shemam abhayam trimurdno dai murdasu. That's talking about the qualities, that they're present on the Purusha's head. Amrita, Shema, and Abhaya. That's the next verse of the second canto, sixth chapter. Oh, boy. Now, okay, so in that second verse, his domain, Lord Vishnu's domain, is said to also include perfect well-being and security of life. These things are found, these qualities are found in his abode. Immortality, fearlessness, perfect well-being, and security. Now, in this passage of the sixth chapter of the second canto, Lord Brahma echoes and explains the Purusha Sukta hymn of the Rig Veda. In the Purusha Sukta, the following is said. Purusha evedam sarvam yat bhutam yat chabhavyam uttamritatvas yeshano yad anina tirohati. The Purusha is everything in this world. What existed in the past and will exist in the future. He is the Lord of immortality, and he is everything that grows from food. Everything that grows from food is basically everything material. That's why Anna is symbolically representing material life. Anyway, another verse, the verse following this in the Purusha Sutta. Etavan asya mahima to jayamscha purushaha padasya vishwa bhutani tripadasya amritam divi. His greatness pervades this world, and yet the Purusha is even greater than that. All created things in this world,
are one quarter of him, while in the spiritual sky is the immortal nectar of his three quarters. Okay, that's what the Rig Veda says. That's what Brahma is paraphrasing or explaining. Now, the original Rig mantras identify the Purusha with what he creates, which is valid not only as a poetic metaphor, but is also substantially true, because in material creation, what is produced is nothing but a transformation of its cause. Okay, he is the creation, the way the Rig Veda says it. Lord Brahma's version shifts the focus of attention to the difference of the creator from his creation. The Purusha rules the transcendental realm, staying separate from his inferior domain. I see. The Rig Veda original text of this Purusha Sutta is talking about looking at the material creation and identifying the Purusha with his creation. Okay? Purusha evedam sarvam. The Purusha is everything in this existence. Whereas Lord Brahma is looking at the same facts but from a different viewpoint. He's looking at the Purusha, the Supreme Lord is sitting in Vaikuntha, and he's in the three pad vibhuti, whereas, that's also mentioned in the Rig Veda, but it's looking from the three pad vibhuti down at the material world, and looking at the difference between the original Supreme Lord and his creation. That's the different viewpoint between the Purusha Sukta of the Rig Veda and Brahma's explanation of it. Okay. What's said is basically the same. He's the Lord of all creation. He's the Lord of immortality, and so on. But it's just being looked at from a different viewpoint. Yes?
In the Munda Upanishad, there's a verse that I don't understand. It says that Brahman comes from Anna. I was wondering...
What comes from Anna?
Anat, Brahman.
Prana comes from Anna, okay.
Prana comes from Anna, after Prana comes mind. I don't understand this.
I think that's just not describing causation, but describing, I forget what you call this, the development of an individual. Where do you, you know, prana is eternal, it's an element, but how do you build up your prana? You go to the doctor and say, my breathing is weak. How can we make my breathing strong? The doctor says, okay, I'll give you this medicine, it'll build up your prana. So from, you know, eat this food, it's good for your prana. So from anna comes prana. By taking the right food, your prana develops. It doesn't mean that literally that's the origin of prana, that anna is the cause of prana, but anna causes the development of prana. And the development of the prana causes the development of the mind. If you practice pranayama, your mind will come under control. It doesn't mean that prana creates the mind, but the mind is developed by the power of prana. Okay, so the power of food develops the prana, and the power of prana develops the mind. Okay.
Where was that quote by Shiva Goswami that Goloka Vrindavan is much larger than
the other? The sloka in the Brahma Samhita that describes the many-petaled lotus, and you know, how the cowherd boys and the gopis are, you know, in different locations, and the lotus or the leaves between the petals. In the commentary to that shloka, we read it in Bhaktisiddhanta's English, but that is derived from Jiva Goswami's Sanskrit commentary. And he says something about that there, if you look. Okay? Okay. Any other questions on this? Yes.
The third verse of Purusha Sukta, which is quoted in the commentary, to say that all created things in this world are one quarter of him, one in the spiritual sky, and the immortal nature of his three quarters. So I cannot understand this. Does it mean that from one point of view, Supreme Lord is situated in the three quarters, and then he became this world, he became this world?
No, well, I'm sorry, the spiritual or the material?
spiritual.
Is it the three quarters?
Yes.
It is the three quarters. The three quarters of existence, that's the spiritual world. And the one quarter, the small part, is the material world.
But at the same time, it seems that it is stressed there that it's not just material world, but it's Purusha itself.
No, no. Only because the material world is also the Purusha, is not different from the Purusha. This is, look, that's what the Rig Veda is doing. It's looking from the material world. Whereas Brahma is looking from, is giving us a spiritual world viewpoint. Purusha Sutta is saying, this creation is not different from the Purusha. The Purusha is everything in this world that we know about. We don't know about some spiritual world up there, but we don't know about it. What we know is this world. And I can tell you the Purusha is everything that exists in this world, the material world. And then the next verse says, in the sky he's got his Dvipad Vibhuti. But it doesn't say anything about it. It just says, we know that he's got his spiritual sky and it's much bigger than this world. But we, you know, we're looking from this world in the Purusha Sutta. Purusha Eve Idam Sarvam. Idam Sarvam. Everything here, what we see in front of us, the Purusha is all of that. That's a statement in the first verse. Everything that grows from food. Whatever's in the spiritual world, it may be there, we don't know about it, and it doesn't grow from food. But everything that grows from food in this world we know, is not different from the Purusha. Now, and then the next verse lets us know, Tato Jayams. But he's more than that. His greatness goes beyond just what we find in the material world. That's the second, the next word, etavan, asya mahima, ato jayams. The Purusha is more also. He's not only this world, he's this world and more. Yes? Yeah, same thing. Everything here is Brahman. But it doesn't mean that Brahman is also more than everything here. Sarvam Kalvidam, everything here is Brahman, but Brahman is also more than that.
When we say that Purusha Evayam Sarvam, so Krishna is, material world is not different from Krishna.
Yes.
And vice versa. And when we say that Vaikuntha is as transcendental, not different from the Lord, so it is oneness of both places. There is a difference.
Yeah, there's different kinds, there's different degrees of oneness. Everything in the creation is non-different from the Lord. But the living entities share his consciousness, whereas the dead matter doesn't. So the living entities are more non-different than the dead matter. And among the living entities, the liberated souls share the Lord's, you know, happiness and full consciousness. Or they share perfect consciousness and happiness. So they're more, the liberated souls are more non-different than the non-liberated souls. And among the liberated souls, some are closer to the Lord than others. So there's all sorts of different degrees of non-difference.
How do we feel matter is oneness with Krishna?
Because it's his energy.
How the energy is one with Krishna?
Well, that's the achintya part. How it is, we don't know, but it is. The energy is different. Krishna is not just the energy. Krishna is something else beside the energy. But the energy isn't anything else but Krishna. The energy doesn't have any substance, any existence separate from Krishna. In that sense, it's not different. It is nothing but, you know, at least part of Krishna.
Like you say that the conditioned living entity shares the consciousness of Krishna.
Yeah, living entities are conscious.
The liberated souls share the happiness and consciousness of Krishna. Similarly, how we can explain matter is sharing what with Krishna?
Existence. Matter exists.
Existence.
Yeah. In fact, the total material, if you don't look at just the changing forms, if you look at the basic matter, it's eternal. Prakriti is eternal. So it shares eternal existence with the Lord. It's changing shapes, but the matter is always there. So that matter shares the quality of sat, sat with the Lord. Yes.
So it looks like that in this verse, the three-body vibhuti, spiritual world and material world are equated.
Equated?
Yeah, because this world is purusha, and purusha also something this they have.
Well, that's a false. See, you're working. You're. This is a different algebra. This rule of what do you call it? Transitivity, I think, doesn't apply. A equals B and B equals C in ordinary algebra that we learn in school means A equals C. But here you can't apply that logic. It doesn't in all different possible algebras that law is not necessarily true. So the material world is the Lord. The spiritual world is the Lord. But you can't say that the material world is the spiritual world. It doesn't work. Because that he is the Lord is not, it doesn't work the other way around. It doesn't mean the Lord is the spiritual world, or the Lord is the material world. Any more than three is one. Three includes one, but it's not just one. It's one plus another two.
It doesn't mean that he's behind the material world, he's behind the spiritual world, but both of them, the spiritual world continue.
And they're also, each of them by themselves, different from him. They're the same and different, inconceivably.
Yeah. So if we say that the Lord himself is the absolute one, Lord and his self and his body, there's no different absolute, these absolute one personality. Other than that, the spiritual world, the liberated source, material world have some degree of oneness with it. You can conclude that it is different.
Have some different.
The Lord Himself is
the actual one, and
the spiritual world, the liberated souls, and the conditioned souls, the material world, having different degree of oneness with Him. Is it okay to conclude?
Yeah, you can say that. When you tell that to someone, he's going to want you to explain what do you mean by that, but you can say it. Yes.
Guruji, the Vaikuntha parents present in material world, so in which category they come? Ekpad Vibhuti or Tripad Vibhuti?
If it's Vaikuntha planet, then it's...
Like Dhruva planet.
No, but that's part of the Tripad Vibhuti. There is no such entity in the material world. There is nothing, well, living entities, but there's no place that's eternal and perfect in the material world. It's really the spiritual world. You know, it's Tripad Vibhuti, because you don't have such qualities as perfect, eternal, happy existence in the material world. Okay. So now we're out of time. We'll have to stop now and continue with this. Tomorrow we have classes. There's a test, but I was told it won't interrupt the classes. It's just a minor test, right? Grammar test.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will have this class tomorrow. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm.